clearest recollection of the consensus issues that came before the prior administration's asbestos committee. He was very kind in doing that, and we're certainly taking those into serious consideration, and I would suspect that at the risk of being premature, that many of those recommendations will be contained in the final regulations.
Okay. Did you make that request before or after you promulgated the regulations that would eliminate all these items?
To be frank, I can't recall. I met with Ms. Longenberg in my office.
And you don't remember whether that was before or after you promulgated the
regulations? No, I don't.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about that specific one now, Commissioner? Do you think we should have a carbon monoxide alarm and a high-temperature shutoff alarm?
Unlike yourself, Representative, I'm not intimately familiar with asbestos work. And as I say, I think that these are all issues that we're discussing internally. There are several of those that are make a lot of sense, and they're just common sense approach. One of them that I would share with you that I think is absolutely critical to this effort is that we find out before we go in whether or not there's asbestos there. You know, predetermination is the key to a safety program. You don't go in and then go, oops, there's asbestos. But we need to have that, we need to have the predetermination of the condition of the building before going in. I think that's certainly something that we want to incorporate in the regulations. From my recollection, as I said, I've looked at a lot of comment letters on asbestos. My recollection was, and I certainly think it makes sense, that you have somebody monitoring an air compressor system. If you're going to, it's not unlike scuba diving or any other where you're in a closed system and you're dependent on an air supply. It's like being on a trampoline. You have somebody watching you and make sure that you're not going to fall. And I certainly think that that's an appropriate area for us to factor into the regulations.
Well, if, as in your words, a lot of these things make common sense, then why did you promulgate regulations to eliminate them?
We put the regulations out for public comment to receive this input. That's a part of the process. It's certainly not, it was not intended to be, nor is it, a done deal. They're out for public comment, receiving those comments.
When you reassess your position and decide what you think is a done deal, will you put that out for public comment before you adopt it?
I'm not intimate with the regulatory process.
I don't care about the regulatory
whatever the standard regulatory disclosure process that operates from this point forward is what we will do. We'll be in compliance.
You know, let's ignore that. That's a baseline. If it doesn't require that you do that, will you do that anyway? Then resubmit what you think is appropriate to allow the public to comment on?
We'll certainly take that under consideration.
So you're not willing to commit to do that at this time?
Since you brought it up.
You're not willing to commit to it at this time?
I'm reluctant to commit to it without knowing what our legal responsibilities are and without having a full understanding of what the requirements are.
Well, let's say there's no
legal... I would certainly take it under advisement.
Okay, there's no legal hindrance in doing that to taking these, but once you've decided what you want to do, putting that before the public again, if there's no legal hindrance to you doing that, will you do that?
Representative, I've just told you, I would certainly take your request under advisement.
So you're not willing to say you will do it?
Absolutely, I am not prepared to...
Okay, so there's a chance that the public may never see again what you decide from this is good and what's is bad before it becomes the law of the state of Alaska.
If that's a question, I've already responded. I'm not familiar enough with what the public process promulgating regulations to tell you whether that would happen or not.
Okay.
I'll be happy to go back, take your comments and your recommendations into consideration when we go and look at them.
You're welcome to. I should know you're welcome to consult with any people from the department you've got here on any questions.
I appreciate
involving
it.
I have myself and Representative Zwacky and Representative Taylor and anyone else. The one thing I want to get to, and I'm sure Representative Copeland is interested in talking about, is worker safety and workplace safety. You know, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the transition report and some of the background materials, but it's clear our state's got, you know, some of the larger problems in the country, especially in some of the more hazardous occupations we've got. What's your, you know, ideas on dealing with this, trying to get these rates down? What's your view of what the department should be doing and is going to be doing over the next 4 years to achieve that?
I thank you for asking the question. Which I didn't plan, but I'm glad you asked because I think it is one of the highest priorities that we have to face. you know, I've said on several occasions that within that first 48 hours, you know, where the hot spots are within your department, and this was certainly one of them. It was, we were greeted with the national press release that Alaska was in the top one or two positions in accident, worker accident, injury, and death. And being naive initially, I said, okay, well, we're going to fix that. And I asked for a breakdown of where all of the accidents and injuries were taking place. And equally as importantly, who were the jurisdictional authorities responsible for seeing that safe workers were protected in those various areas. And remarkably, what we found was, other than a couple of very high-risk industries that do fall within our jurisdiction, many of the efforts to provide a safer workplace have been frustrated because of jurisdictional, not overlap, but chasms. We have federal laws responsible for certain areas. We have the Bureau of Mine Safety responsible. We have the FAA responsible in aircraft. We have the Coast Guard responsible in other areas. Certainly the Department of Labor has responsibility. And we were finding that, I was appalled to find out that there has never been a coordinating effort on behalf of all these jurisdictional authorities to bring to the table all of the resources that they have, all of the data that they have, and to have a coordinated effort. I'm pleased to say that the first historical meeting of those happened a couple of weeks ago in Anchorage. The Department of Labor took the initiative. First time, as I understand it, in the history of this regulatory arena, did all the players come to the table and commit to a continuing effort to coordinate their safety programs, to have a much better line of communication. Our next meeting is scheduled for May 22nd. We've received the commitment from all of these jurisdictions to meet on a quarterly basis, again, to share resources, to share information, to develop a more cooperative attitude. So I think that's certainly a step that I'm pleased to say we have made and are going forward. But that's certainly not the answer. I mean, enforcement, regulation and enforcement is only a small area, and that comes on the back end. What we need to do is be sure that we're giving the priority to these issues before it becomes a problem. We need to get out in front of the issue. And you know, maybe it sounds a little trite, but I guess what I'm talking about is marketing safety. My labor standards and safety department division is presently working on a marketing plan to promote consultation and training for bringing safety up in the public consciousness, to encourage employers to not just be safe, but be safe for the right reasons, because it's the right thing to do. It's also good business. I've heard, as I've gone around the state in the past few months, some spectacular success stories from companies who have put in safety programs. Time loss off work has gone down substantially. Obviously, the workers' compensation rates go down substantially. I mean, it's a success story all the way around, and I think that we need to give more recognition to those people that are a success and use peer pressure in marketing to get safety into the workplace before we have a problem. But having said that, I would also assure you that without fear or favor, if an employer chooses not to provide a safe workplace for their workers, we will go into the full extent of the law and see that it will cause to be happy, because there's just no excuse for intentionally putting people at risk. So we are working on a marketing program. We think that's certainly a good start to try to give more attention to those safety issues. And another central issue to it that probably is not driven by our department, but I think that we certainly have a responsibility to look at it and work closely with the departments that do, is alcohol and drug abuse in the workplace. If we could take alcohol and drugs out of the workplace, while I don't have any specific statistics at my fingers, if we go on the information that we have, certainly in other areas, we could reduce accident, injury, and death almost overnight, substantially overnight. So I think that's a focus that we certainly want to work with Health and Human Services and Department of Education, for that matter, on addressing those issues.
Great. I have some follow-up questions, but I want the other members get a chance to represent Swaggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First thing, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a comment on was the two pieces of paper that were thrown in front of us by Representative Bellamy, you know, and then he just tour into the commissioner, you know, there's more than just this. There's proposed regulations that are sitting here, and this is just one topic. And it would have been appropriate that if we were going to start discussing what these proposed changes are going to be, that we have these proposed changes sitting in front of us so that we could address them also, or at least look at what they proposed. But again, you know, my concern is I've seen this wording in almost every department we've had from previous years to present years, and talking about proposed changes. And I won't go any further, but it's just, you know, it's nice that for you to have it sitting in front of you, Representative Donnelly, and have you go to page and verse and sentence and wording. But, you know, it would be nice for us to know what the hell you're talking about when you're throwing some accusations out there. And Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, you know, I appreciate the time that I've spent with you several times. And believe me, there are some of us that believe that we have over-regulated through these departments and over-regulated through the statutes and the laws that we've passed at the expense of both the small and the large businesses out there. And we also know, or some of us will admit, that some of those regulations that have been passed either by us by law or by the departments have favored certain labor organizations. You know, but, you know, if we want to throw things on the table and make accusations, then let's be honest and admit that some of those things out there, especially on the asbestos. We already know, and DEC is already working with the federal government because they have been finding out that some of the restrictions that the federal government has put on in regards to asbestos, they may be withdrawing because they have found out there are distinct two classes of asbestos, one which is definitely a carcinogen, which has not been used since about 1950, and the rest of the asbestos out there that they are finding out they probably do not have to remove because it is not cancerous or carcinogenic out there. And this state is finally going on and taking on the federal government in hopes that they start looking at what the federal government has passed and what the regulations. And I appreciate what you're doing by taking a serious look at the asbestos and also taking a serious look at a lot of the other regulations, which I believe are very restrictive. The other areas that I know you and I have talked about, and it does include safety standards, and I don't think there's a person in this room that isn't concerned about the safety standards in the workplace out there and the protection of the employee. But yet when we start to establish training requirements and we go from 10 hours to 20 hours to 40 hours, and then just before December of this past year, we had some of those training requirements suddenly jump to 80 hours. And yet we know it favors certain labor organizations. And I'm hoping you're taking a very serious look at that and why we go from 10 hours to 80 hours in less than a year in a lot of other areas without any statistics, without any proof that it is going to improve the safety standards, or if we had problems in several areas of our workforce in those areas in regards to statistics on safety standards. So again, those are just kind of comments. You and I have shared those. I hope that you do take a serious look at all those areas, because it's time we find out just, you know, how restrictive some of our regulations may be out there.
We have Representative Taylor and Representative Copeland.
The commissioner would like to comment on any of those.
Would you like to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Zawarthy. Perhaps it would be useful if I just very briefly go over where I sort of come from in the regulatory scene and what my general philosophy is with regard to regulations. I come from a regulated industry, and I am all too sensitive to the fact that regulations are like minefields. I think that the KISS method that we all are so familiar with is probably the rule, and that is we need to keep them simple. You keep them simple, you keep them understandable, you make them work for you, and as the governor very frequently says, they're not supposed to be roadblocks, they're supposed to be roadmaps, and I think that's what we're looking for here. It's not the exercise of putting people through hoops for the sake of putting people through hoops, but we have make sense regulations that give guidance and jurisdiction over areas that are pertinent to our particular fields of study here. And, I think that there's a room for regulation. I think we need regulations. People need to know what the rules are. And the process that I support, have always supported, will continue to support, is agree on the rules, promulgate the rules, and apply them consistently across the board. And that means everybody understands what it is. They're not used to send in hit squads. They're not sent to to cause problems, but help solve problems. So that's just, thank you for the opportunity, just so you have some sense of where I come from in the regulatory arena.
Before we go to Representative Taylor, Representative Copeland, and then Representative Bruckman, I just want to offer one comment. The point you're making at the letter is sort of a common language. The commissioner offered to provide us with other similar letters and send up just so we can see that, so we can take it up later. So just note that. Representative Taylor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I didn't make speeches here. I'd rather just ask you some questions. I find it fascinating to talk with. And the last administration removed every single employer representative out of the Department of Labor. In fact, it was so gross, I suggested at that confirmation hearing to that commissioner that we change the name of his department to the Department of Labor Unions. Now, in the history of the state, that had never occurred before. Every administration had at least made an attempt to balance it. Now, my question to you is, I believe in that balance, and I think that's important that we have a balance. I don't want to see that your department totally throw out every person that ever had anything to do with labor and just bring in employers. I know past administrations have done that, and I thought it was offensive to the process. But I just want to be assured from you that there will be a balance maintained within your department, and that one perspective or the other of the two clients, as you see them, will not have an advantage over the other.
We're certainly looking toward that. I've used that word balance a lot when I talk about the Department of Labor, and I go back to the key constituencies, and that is you can't have one without the other. And some of the appointments that I made at the division director level, I was focusing primarily on people who had no vested interest or background in the issues, not unlike myself. We have a very competent, talented staff at the Department of Labor who are very proficient in those issues. But what we were looking for were people who knew how to run organizations and how to make them streamlined. As I mentioned to you once, I consider myself to be a romantic when it comes to labor unions. I came from the credit union movement, and it's very similar. I mean, it rose out of a social need. You take care of people's pocketbooks to a large extent, and you take care of many of the other things that come to them. The organized labor has fulfilled a very important role in our economy and continues to do that. And I think that they are a very important sector of our worker representation. I think there are also a lot of workers out there who are not represented. And there are a lot of employers, both large and small, who are also players in this. So that's the long answer. The short answer is absolutely. I think that we have to be sure that we have representation when we have labor representatives. They come from both the organized and contract. I don't know what disorganized labor. That we have a balance from large employers, small employers, and both organized labor and individual representatives.
So I might continue. You indicated statistically that Alaska was in a number one or number two position. I would be shocked if Alaska wasn't in a number one position in most categories, primarily because we're the only undeveloped pioneer frontier environment left in America where you have to go out and try and muck out an old mine or build a brand new logging road on a hillside. Most of Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, etc., in their resource development areas, which are your most dangerous occupations, are already pretty well developed and are working in somewhat developed areas. So I would suggest that you compare the resource development industries of Alaska with the resource development industries in the more remote locations in those better developed states. And I think you'll find that we're not that far off statistically as far as accidents. I'm particularly enchanted with your concept, because it's something I've advocated here for years, on removing substance abuse from the workplace. Now, I've had to fight every time and been defeated every time I've attempted it in the legislature by a Democratic majority, I might add, folks, whenever I tried to insist that we put something about drug testing into the workplace, that we put something about alcohol abuse into the workplace. And because of that, I'm very pleased to hear that we have a commissioner who realizes that there's a significant amount of accidents that are occurring in the workplace because of these things. I would encourage you in every way possible to implement testing programs. And I think the very first place it should be implemented is implemented on every single state worker. If you want to take a bite out of crime for drugs, that's the fastest way to do it. You'll also reduce significantly accidents. I applaud your efforts and wish you the very best on that alcohol and drug question. pleased that you are taking a review of it, and I would join Mr. Donnelly only to this extent in suggesting that, that you ought to probably make the language a little clearer about what really is being accomplished, and I know you'd be doing that. Thank
I'll read
much.
My letters more closely before I sign them.
We have a problem here because three of us have got to get to a resource meeting on mental health. If there's Representative Copeland, if you have a relatively quick question or if you could join us, we're going to have to continue this to provide members a chance to do it. My apologies to the commissioner for
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be
No, it'd be to an uncertain day in the future. You could, you did make the effort to come here today. Hey, you surely get a chance to ask one question.
Potentially, yeah.
It looks sort of long in your paper, though.
Mr. Chairman, I'd hope to hear more from the commissioner and less from Mark.
If you're willing to defer your question, let's just hold it over, because I do want to, the commissioner's been very forthcoming here with this, and we want to give you a chance to respond to all the questions we have. Is that suitable for your schedule?
I just would like to say that I did observe many of the hearings that were conducted by your staff on the asbestos standard, and I'd like to commend the staff for the even handed way in which they conducted those hearings. In the beginning, they were got rocked from both sides. But toward the end, essentially, they concentrate very much on developing, making the standards workable. And you had the participation of primarily contractors in the asbestos abatement field, to be sure, but labor and others. And they were concentrating in the sessions that I went to at the end, primarily how to make them workable. And I think for that reason, our standards were developed by your department. We're not drawn up in some bureaucratic cubbyhole, I have to say that, but actually out in the field. And the federal standards that have contradictions and are now in court trying to get these contradictions off. I commend your department's standards. I hope they maintain most of them.
I would like to. I thank you for your comments, and I absolutely concur with you. There was a great deal of work that was done by that committee, and we're certainly using that as a resource as we develop the final regulation, and there are many areas of that work that I think you'll probably end up seeing in the final draft. To use Representative Donnelly's expression, we certainly have no intention of throwing the baby out of the bathwater.
We just about have to bring up Representative Eichmann. Is there something you wanted to add real quick?
Just a real quick question here, Commissioner. I'm new here and 75 session days old. I've never been involved in confirmation hearings before, but I'm kind of curious. There's a lot of your work and direction is going to be toward populated areas like bigger cities. How are you going to look at rural Alaska and talking like small sewer, average populated villages? What's your program? What do you intend to do to alleviate unemployment out toward the area that I come from, as an example, right. Southwest Alaska.
In the interest of time, I'll try to be very brief. As a matter of fact, I apologize for being distracted for a minute. I had a 3:00 meeting in the governor's office on this very issue. Representative Jacko has put forth several pieces of legislation in an effort to stimulate rural development and jobs in rural Alaska. There is a mini cabinet on the issue. It's certainly an area of real concern to us, and we want to work hand in hand with community and regional affairs in creating programs or initiatives that will stimulate stable employment in the rural areas. As you know, there's a certain degree of difficulty because the rural preference law, which we had enacted, was struck down on constitutional grounds. But I think that there are creative means and methods of addressing those. I think that what we're trying to do in this process is to, again, focus on stability, focus on not quick shot in the arm, but in programs that will create a sustainable economy in rural Alaska. And as I say, I think Representative Jacko has come forth with the outline of some very interesting initiatives that we're looking forward to working closely with him on.
Would it be too much to ask a letter of you, in interest of time, to give to give you a response in writing to my office? I would appreciate that. And just a follow-up, how much federal funding does your department, I realize that you don't have people here with you that could answer specific questions, but maybe something you how long?
On federal funding?
Federal funding. What do we get funding per capita? By population?
It's primarily on by program. And for example, our total budget, and I may be off one or two, but our total budget is about $54 million. And of that, only about $13 million were general funds, and that was using a 91 base. So as you can see, the preponderance of our funding comes from $41 million comes from federal funds. Now, most of that comes through our Employment Service Division, which is unemployment.
How is that based by number of unemployment people enrolled in as unemployment people?
Right. It's tied to a formula with unemployment tax, the federal and state unemployment taxes that are sent, but it is primarily a federally funded program. And it's based on grants and type of programs. I don't know formulas for each one.
Oh, later on, in the interest of time,
sure.
I'll ask those questions if I may.
I'd be happy to.
I'm just curious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a variety of questions, too. I'm going to have to leave. Representative Brecker, if you want to ask another question, maybe.
Real quickly, you included your letter to Representative John Donovan, a mistake in asking.
Well, Representative Brecker, we're going to have another confirmation hearing.
Right.
At which chance, I mean, if you'd like to request that now, you can as well.
Right.
Okay.
I just did, so.
Okay, good.
When are we having
this? We'll find a time suitable with the commissioner that works for her schedule. Okay, appreciate your indulgence, Commissioner, on the timing problem. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay.